Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:57 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is January 25th, and I thought I would kick off with the high yield spread. It's down to 468 basis points, so that's meaningful, and it suggests that there's definitely demand for high yield. And I think these are important things that we need to pay attention to. Why would there be such demand for riskier bonds when we're on the cusp of a recession? Well, there's got to be a couple of reasons for that. So I think the first is absolute yield. So when you have the 10-year at 3.5%, then high yield spreads are at 460 basis points. So then you're picking up almost 8% on a nominal yield. And when inflation is trending downwards, well, then you're getting a positive real yield. So then by buying high yield bonds, there is a bargain opportunity. And that's one of the reasons why we're starting to get more demand for bonds coming through. The high yield overall is becoming more attractive. Now, we also have the fact that with wage growth standing where it is right now and inflationary pressure starting to come down, you actually have positive real wage growth as well. So then that's also helping to support consumers. And then that should help to support demand in the economy. So that's also a positive. Well, I was out for dinner last night with a couple of elderly and highly successful traders and investors. They chastised me for being too bearish and basically pointed out that high yield spreads are coming down. And it's not just high yield spreads are coming down because the very, if we think about high yield spreads, well, it's also interesting that the spread of C bonds over B bonds is also coming down. So it's not just that risky bonds are coming down, but then we are seeing that it's at every point in the curve we're getting a compression in spreads. So then that's helping to support enthusiasm. And then we have the fact that we now have a majority of shares that are above their 200-day moving average. So the number is now up to about 58%, and it's trending higher. So we can look at this longer term, and we can see that anytime it gets down to around 20, then it does rebound. And not least because by the time it gets down to around 20, you've had a big decline. So a reversion to the mean takes place, and you get a rebound in the number of companies that are trading above their respective 200-day moving averages. And then you get it up into the upper half of this long-term range before it starts to roll over again. So that does support the view that we might have some additional upside to go in here. Then let's look at the Dow Jones. And it is consolidating above the 200-day moving average, and it was in positive territory today. Now, I think that's especially interesting because we've had quite a few companies that have been cutting back on their earnings. And I recorded the audio yesterday before the conference call that Microsoft had, and they disappointed with their outlook. So the share opened lower today, but then recouped most of the loss. Now, it doesn't mean that Microsoft is suddenly going to go all the way back up to its peak immediately, but it was well off the low in here today. Now, we also have companies like Tesla and IBM reporting after the close today. Tesla is very oversold. It could rally up to $200, which would be a doubling from the low, and it would still be below the overhead trading range and only approximating the region of both the 1,000 and the 200-day moving averages. So there's certainly the potential that we get a recovery rally underway. And there's definitely an argument that more defensive type instruments are doing better. So The Dow Jones is above its 200-day moving average, and so is the Dividend Aristocrats. Now, we had a big downward dynamic right at the end of the year in the Noble ETF, and subsequently prices have stabilized. And then the counter argument to this continued rebound translating into a reassertion of the medium-term uptrend is that the yield curve spread is sharply inverted. And it's not simply that it's inverted, but that every point on the curve from 6 months forward is to about 10 years is inverted. So you can see here that there's a clear peak in the yield curve at 6 months, and every single point on it is lower than the last out to 10 years. Now, interest rates are probably going to go up by another 25 basis points next week, so that could certainly help to further invert the yield curve. And then it's not simply the Treasury curve that's been inverted. The Muni curve was inverted right at the end of last year, and it popped back on the upside, but we're still in a very tight monetary condition environment. And then let's just round that out and look at the high yield spread, high yield yield curve spread, and it's still trending downwards. So even though high yield spreads signal demand for bonds, the contracting high yield spread, or yield curve spread, is suggesting that the difference in yield that you're picking up between the short end and the long end is contracting, and that you're not really getting value for your time value of money. And that's also indicative of a more risky environment overall. Then let's also just give some due consideration to the fact that money supply growth is now negative for the first time ever. So the central bank, particularly the Federal Reserve, is sucking money out of the system at a rate that has never been seen in, I'm willing to guess, in most people's lifetimes. And this is a profound change. So, what it also suggests is that the speed with which it's all been happening isn't really being priced into markets just yet. So, the more history we look at, the we can see that all the way back in 93, 94, money supply growth got to almost negative, but did not go negative. And then the size of the Fed's balance sheet is contracting almost twice as fast on this occasion as it did back in 2018 and 19. So there's a lot of money that is coming out of the system. And this is going to have a knock-on effect on growth and on speculative activity. So we're in this sort of happy Goldilocks phase where we have these inverted yield curves and we have monetary conditions that are getting progressively tighter, and a stock market environment where investors are still willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And I think that that's something that we do need to pay attention to, because we could easily see a similar type of condition to what we saw in the period in 2006 and 7. So let's just zoom in on what that looked like. So going all the way back to the pre-period, we had the big drop. And then we had a failed upside break, and then we had a bigger drop, and it came down below the 1,000-day moving average. And then it bounced, and it bounced pretty impressively. And in fact, it broke the sequence of lower rally highs. And that bounce, having come up from a failed downside break, it lasted from May all the way through. Excuse me, it started in March and went all the way through to May. And then it rolled over. And then we wobbled around for a couple of months in the region of the low, and then there was a crash. So it's worth reminding ourselves that the market came from about 16 to 1200, and then from 1200 to 666. So we'd already seen a fairly substantial decline. Now we had here a failed downside break. We had a rebound. Now we're getting a subsequent rebound. And that rebound could easily push up into this area, into in between the 4 to 4500 point level. And ultimately then, the bigger question is going to be about how long does the Federal Reserve keep those interest rates high? And they're not going to start cutting immediately. And we're going to start to see pressures building in the financial sector. Well, we're definitely getting a lot of variation in performance across the banking sector. Now, the S&P 500 banks is steadying, and it's coming up to the upper side of this range. So that's also supportive of the view that we are due a rebound over the next few months. And then let's just contrast that with how the performance of some of these private lenders are doing. So Blackstone is now pushing back up to test the sequence of lower rally highs again. And then Brookfield is right in the region of its sequence of lower rally highs and testing the 200-day moving average. Then we can think about what Capital One did today. And I thought this was rather interesting that the share was up in a really dynamic manner and pushing up to test the upper side of this range that's been forming now for 6 months. But the rebound that it posted was on the back of the fact that they're putting aside over $2 billion as a loan loss prevention. So they're being more aggressive than any of the other lenders in terms of those loan loss provisions because they're worried about the health of the consumer. And I think that's justifiable that they'd be rewarded for doing that because it suggests that they're going to be able to protect themselves. And it's not a, well, let's just look at some of those bonds. And I don't want to I don't want to claim what their credit rating is. So I thought I would just pick up one of those bonds, and let's see if there's any of them are liquid. There aren't, but I think the most important thing is that when you have a triple B or it's actually an A minus with Fitch, then you don't have the luxury of thinking about skipping on loan loss provisions. But the yields are not aggressive. They're only at about 5 and 5.45. So that's actually a really tight spread relative to the wider high yield sector. And I think that we're going to see more of these kinds of provisions. We're going to see more companies making these same kinds of provision as well. Now, at the moment, what we're seeing also is that the majority of the job losses are happening in the larger companies. So Google has fired 12,000 people, and Meta 11,000, Amazon, Microsoft 10,000, Salesforce 8,000, Amazon 8,000. So they're definitely in cost cutting, and that's helping to support some of those companies. So Amazon has rebounded off its low and it's approaching the $100 level again. And it could easily push up into that overhead trading range and approach the region of the 200-day moving average. Meta sold off exceptionally aggressively in 2022, and it has now just about unwound all of its overextension relative to the 200-day moving average. So that's a pretty big level. Then let's just look at some of those smaller tech companies. And Snap hasn't broken its sequence of lower rally highs yet, and it's down from 80 and change to 9. And there's A very strong reliance on some of these smaller techie companies on low interest rates and abundant liquidity, and we just don't have that. So this is problematic. Now, by the same token, when we think about China, well, they've just ended their 3-year quarantine, and the market has been rebounding. Now, it's closed right now for Chinese New Year, but it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs, and Hong Kong will open tomorrow. So we're going to see how those stocks open upwards. But the bigger point, of course, is that we have tighter liquidity and slowing economic activity in North America, whereas there's going to be a rebound in economic activity in China. There's monetary and fiscal stimulus, and that's also helping to stoke demand for the kinds of things that China consumes, which are luxury goods and commodities. So some of those miners, like BHP Billiton, is pushing on to a new all-time high, or at least a new closing high, in here today. South 32, which BHP sold off a few years ago, was popping on the upside yesterday and held the majority of the advance in here today. Rio Tinto has been championing itself as the provider of all of the battery and the metals necessary for the energy transition, and it's right in the region of the upper side of an 18-month range, and yields 8%, and the PE is 9. So we're not talking about aggressive valuations, and I think when we think about aggressive valuations, well, a lot of the conventional automotive companies don't have them. And Volkswagen is steady right now, and it has a PE of 4 and yields 4.75. And they're attempting to emulate the kinds of business model that Fiat did with Ferrari. And Ferrari really hasn't looked back in terms of its advance since its IPO. So Volkswagen has listed Porsche, and they're also looking at listing Lamborghini. So they're looking at taking pieces of value out of the company and seeing what they can get for them. And that's likely to be beneficial overall. But the big challenge for the automotive sector is commodity prices and the availability of those commodities. And Norilsk Nickel said in here today that they're expecting nickel production to go down. And then, of course, you have the bigger question about how can Western countries get that nickel out of Russia, and where will that metal be sold? So the nickel price remains really quite firm, and as we think about where's all the electricity going to come from for those batteries, well, I just don't see how it can be done without nuclear. And the Global X uranium ETF continues to firm from the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and this looks like a first step above the base. Well, with these questions around the sustainability of the dollar strength and economic growth in North America, then gold is continuing to hold this very short-term sequence of higher reaction lows, and it's holding above the $1,900 area, and it reversed an earlier decline. So I think it's quite likely we are going to get up and test that 2,000 level, and then we're going to get some consolidation. And it's how well it consolidates in that area is going to be the real arbiter of whether we are back in a demand-dominated environment. I think the other point that's worth highlighting for bulls is that Bitcoin is proving to be quite resilient, and it has popped on the upside over the last 3 weeks, and it's now testing at the region of the 200-day moving average, and it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs. And I've often described Bitcoin as a liquidity barometer. So even though money supply is contracting, and there are lots of reasons to think that a recession is imminent, well, Bitcoin is performing rather well here, and that would suggest that there's liquidity coming from somewhere, and perhaps that liquidity is coming more from China than it is from the USA. I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.